71 IMX Mobile.
Something, something, KD2VNG, good morning.
AAG, it's Whiskey 1, India, Mike X-Ray, name is Doc, no Oscar Charlie. We had a doctor's appointment this morning, gonna be on the road in a few minutes.
Well, you're late, doctor's appointment. I usually try to schedule those early so I don't mess up the whole day. I hate going to doctor.
We just moved down here a couple months ago, and of course, I'm moving into the new place and messed my back up, so we're having to hit the chiropractor two or three times a week. Try and set it for mid-morning.
Move down here. Oh, how unfortunate. From where, if I might ask?
So we're building a place on Lake Hartwell out in Townville. Moved down from the Washington, D.C. area, Northern Virginia.
I don't know the D.C. area that much. I'm more familiar with the New York City area.
Yeah, unfortunately, spent about 50 years in the D.C. area. And my wife is from Anderson, so, I got some chatter in the background from the, from the NAV system. But, yeah, she decided it was time to move back down here. She'd been up there almost 40 years. I've been there 50 years, but I've been coming down here for at least that long.
No, the weather might be more to your liking, too. I don't miss the weather. Actually, where I was wasn't so bad because I was in the New York City area. You know, if you're in upstate New York, it's a bit harsher. But I don't miss it that much, although, quite frankly, I probably should have stayed there.
Yeah, well, we both retired, and political situation around the D.C. area was getting really bad, and the traffic situation just got worse month by month, so it was time to get out of Dodge. There's three houses on the block that we're on now, so we're out in the boonies.
You said something about Lake Hartwell. Oh, so you're out that way.
Bill? On the outskirts of Townville, actually, I think we're 3 miles from the Fairplay post office and 12 and a half miles from the Townville post office, but our mailing address is Townville, unfortunately.
One of the problems is, it's kind of not the most convenient part of the world for that reason. It's like, let me go drive 5 miles this way to get a gallon of milk and 5 miles the other way to get some bread and butter to go with it. You put a lot of mileage.
Hey, we know how that works. We're probably 15 miles from the nearest supermarket for a good many years, and now we're only 10 miles from the market.
You're literally 10 miles from anywhere. And the funny thing is, this was when I lived in Florida, in the Key Largo area. You know, where I was, it was probably, you're literally 8 to 10 miles from anywhere. Because it's on the other side of the bridge that basically leads into the Keys. And the funny thing is, nobody in that little enclave I lived in there seemed to have a working automobile. How do you live somewhere where you can't go anywhere? So yeah, naturally rely on me to give you a ride.
Familiar with that area, we lived about 20 miles north of Homestead for off and on for several years. And used to go fishing at the north end of I think it was Key Largo on the carts where they put the carts out bridge in.
That underpass under the Cartstown Bridge where you got like Alabama Jacks.
I've been down there, but we used to get off work at midnight and go down to Cardtown Bridge with a cooler and a bucket of worms and drown as many worms as we could.
Where the Cardtown Bridge is, and actually to one... As you approach that bridge, there's that actually the one little, I don't want to call it a town, it's kind of like a settlement. There's actually a village in Cardtown.
Plantation City or something like that, yeah, there's a wide spot in the road just before you get there.
It's actually called the Village of Cardtown, you know, on the Florida side of the Cardtown Bridge, and it's kind of almost entirely located in that side canal. And I think the history of it is it's a enclave almost entirely of squatters. It's all like houseboats, little shacks.
The area has changed so much since, I think we left in 70. And the Everglades used to start at, not too far from where we were, and then the was back in 87, I think. We met some friends coming down from here, actually, to visit with us when we were stationed in Honduras, and the edge of the Everglades is almost 25 miles further out in the Everglades than it had been when we lived down there.
However, I had property in Collier County, near Naples, or actually near Imoloki, which 20 years ago was 10 miles beyond the eastern edge of the frontier. But now, actually, people wanting to buy it because I think, you know, development's coming out that way.
Yeah. They had the same problem up in the Washington area. I think the Richmond suburbs moving north kind of crossed the Washington, D.C. suburbs coming south about 15 years ago.
The place where that sort of happened, or, you know, that whole suburban sprawl thing is the, you know, the Atlanta area. When I went to school there, I lived there maybe close to 40 years ago. And now I think the entire northern part of Georgia, the upper third of Georgia, is pretty much the Atlanta metro area.
Had a run down to HRO in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago, pick up a new rig, and it seemed like the closer you got to Atlanta, the worse and worse the traffic got, and I used to avoid Atlanta like the plague whenever we come through this area.
No, and I guess, let's see, if I remember the last time I drove up that way, I mean, the D.C. area you can no longer avoid anyway. When I used to go up there years ago, I would take the Beltway to avoid D.C., yeah, even the Beltway now. If I had to go up north, I don't go that way anymore. But the Atlanta area has, the Atlanta metro area, and especially the suburban area, has tripled in size, I would say, since maybe the 1980s.
Yeah, we used to, a bunch of us used to go down to the race in Talladega, usually in the spring, and it's always an adventure trying to figure out how to avoid going around or through Atlanta.
Can't really do either one. And D.C. was the same way long, long, long before. I remember figuring out, gee, the fastest way through D.C. is actually go through the center of town. Anacostia Freeway or whatever that road is. And, you know, the Beltway, which was built to avoid the downtown area, is actually worse because that area grew up along, that's like now Defense Contractor Row, or government contractor, you know, industrial parks. It grew faster than the DCA metro area.
resemble that statement. I worked for the government for 30 years and was a contractor for almost 20.
Well, that's okay. Government workers are always very much maligned. But, you know, the public sector in this country actually does a reasonably good job of what they do. They're, you know, you don't get on the government fast. You know, you don't join the public service to become a rock star or climb the corporate ladder. People have their reasons. You know, you've got good job security and good pension plan, for one.
Yeah, there's that to be said for it. The main reason I got into it was for the travel. I spent a good part of my 30 years overseas.
Overseas, what sort of thing did you do? That sounds interesting.
Service for 30 years. Got to see a good part of the world. Probably spent the last half of my career in Central and South America.
In the Foreign Service, as in one of dozens of embassy staff attached to, let's say, I don't know, the Brazilian embassy or the Brazilian consulate. So one of those people.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've worked at the consulate in Rio. And being single, I was in a group called the Flying Squad. And basically our job was to travel and fill in places around the world, you know, for however long. So I've been gone as short as 10 days and as long as a year.
It this way, you got to see a lot of parts of the world, maybe not always some of the choicer parts of the world, but you got to travel a lot, see a lot of places and meet people you never would meet normally, and Uncle Sam's paying for it. And, you know, generally without getting shot at, you know, because the only other way to do that would be, you know, I guess, American military.
I can truthfully say I've never been shot at in anger, only in error.
Accidents happen, I suppose. But yeah, you know, the Foreign Service, you know, like, kind of like the military without being shot at constantly. But yeah, that would have been a good way to basically to travel.
No problem, but whenever a situation would come up in some country and they had to start pulling staff out, they would send people like myself in to fill in.
I see. So you're temporary staff to fill in until the real staff can get to the airport and get the hell out of here.
You've got it.
That was a job description. You know, temporary emergency embassy staff. Once we get out the real diplomats and the real staff, you know, the last person to turn out the lights, fold up the flags, lock the door, whatever.
Fine when you can do it. Spent the whole Bangladesh War for Independence in Dhaka, and the building was so old that the consulate, if we ever got to a point where we had to lock ourselves in a vault, you couldn't lock it from the inside. You had to spin the combination off from the outside, and luckily it never came to that.
What you're saying is, in effect, somebody would have had to lock you in there, right? And then take their chances with the angry mob burning American flags. Because you're saying lock yourself in the vault, it doesn't lock from the inside.
Most of the newer ones do, but this was old building. But, you know, that happens every once in a while. But, you know, usually it, just being able to travel to all these places kind of offsets the negatives.
Qualifications specifically do you need for that? Linguistics? Military training? Or, I don't know. Well, you know, I don't know. Most Americans don't know much about the Foreign Service.
military, but it's a matter of getting hired on. If you got security clearances, that helps a whole lot. And they'll train you for whatever they want you to do. And if you're dumb enough to sign on a dotted line and say it anywhere, anytime, for however long, you're fair game.
Interesting. Now, I mean, I suppose I have some romanticized version of what it would be like, you know, go to an exotic land. Yeah, you know, stay in some crappy, dingy room 24 hours a day, which is like every other crappy, dingy room you've ever been in everywhere else. And depending upon where it is, hopefully this week there's no rebel grenade attack.
Usually it's a job, not an adventure, but it's a little more interesting than working 9 to 5 somewhere. And in 50 years, I never had a job where I had to deal with the public, which I consider a positive.
Yeah, I was always, well, as an engineer, I never had to deal with the public either. In fact, usually you want to keep the engineers away from the public and keep them away from the sales staff. You ever notice in a lot, if you go to a lot of corporate, the engineering and sales staff are in two different places. Because if you ask the engineer, you know, the truth about this particular product, you'll get a truthful answer.
I had a plaque on my wall that said communicating with an engineer is only slightly more difficult than communicating with the dead.
That's true. Maybe I have a little bit of advantage in that I can speak both languages, engineering and English. You know, as far as how to explain things to people, maybe I'm a little better at it. But yeah, management doesn't usually understand that. For managing engineers, it's like herding cats.
We reached one point there toward the end of my career where the equipment is getting so complicated that we've got to find a bunch of engineers and teach them how to use the equipment, because it's getting beyond the ability of the people that we have now, which, you know, we had a long laugh over that.
Who makes money is the technical writers, the people who can speak engineering and English and can actually figure out how to write the product manual, you know, if it's an actual product that's like sort of, that's where the money is. If you're bilingual in engineering and English, and you can write an instruction manual for something, not a lot of people can, probably.
Oh, yeah, what's even more fun is, I spent several years in a training capacity and teaching people how to run equipment in Spanish in Central and South America. And a good many days, I was a half a page ahead of the students getting the tech manuals translated.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is, probably worse than communicating with engineers is training engineers, because, you know, they always think they're smarter than you are. Oh, yeah, I'm smarter than the guy, than the instructor who's running this class. I know more than he does. Which, you know, may have been true, but so that's another potential nightmare is training people who think they already know most of what there is to know.
That occasionally, but all in all, it wasn't bad, and got to see the chunk of the world on somebody else's nickel, and it was a lot of fun. When I retired in 96, and things started getting real political, and it just point where it was no fun anymore. Anyway, I have arrived at my destination, so we're going to have to say good morning. I'm going to run in here and get somebody to walk on my back. K2V. And I lost the rest of it. W1IMX.
KD2BNG. Well, nice talking to you. Helped me out here with part of this drive. And thanks for the company. 73s. There's a net on this repeater at every night at 9, so maybe we'll see you there. Anyway, you have a rest of your great day. I'm getting into traffic too here, so I'm going to sign with you. KD2BNG, I'll be clear.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, we check into the net whenever we can.